production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. And it feels like Monday, but it is the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody had a good Memorial Day. We have had we've had some nice weather. We've had some heat. We've had a lot of rain. We've had a lot of all three. So hope everybody doing well here on this first day after Memorial Day.
We're supposed to get more rain over the next couple of days as well. Hopefully,
we're going to get a good bit more rain, I think, for the rest of today and tonight.
Hopefully, it'll pass through in time for some postseason baseball.
Oh yes,
this weekend.
Yes. But yes, the number four national seed Auburn Tigers, and yes, that was a pleasant surprise. I mean, I'd said Auburn had definitely done enough according to the metrics to be a top eight national seed. I was a little nervous, and then boom, man! You see the top three seeds. Yeah. I mean, it's like it's the SEC right there. It was the six of the top seven seeds from the SEC, including Auburn being number four.
A projection we saw last week had six of the top seven from the SEC. I mean, the question was sort of how many would the SEC get, and especially how many of the top eight would be from the SEC, and the SEC got some pretty good news yesterday as far as how many teams are going to host this weekend and how many teams could potentially continue to host when you get into super regional play, deciding who goes to Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, Vandy, the number one national seed, followed by Texas, then Arkansas and Auburn. The first non-SEC team, North Carolina, at five.
The only one in the top seven, right?
That's right. Yeah. Then LSU and Georgia are 6 and 7. And Oregon State was the number eight national seed. So there are the teams that, if they hold serve in their regionals, would be hosting super regionals. And Auburn's regional starts Friday.
One team that's pretty unhappy about their seeding, just from the feedback I was able to see online. Well, a couple of them come to mind, but one team in particular in that top 16 that thought they would be a little bit closer to the top was Coastal Carolina, the team that Auburn's going to face.
Were they 11?
They're the one that
they're 13.
They match up with Auburn in super regionals. Yeah. And they thought they had done enough to even though they're a mid-major, I think there was sort of the belief, especially after they won the conference tournament, that maybe they had put themselves in position to be, if not eight, then close to maybe in the top 10. And instead, they're going to host in the first round, although they draw the Florida Gators, I believe, which is a tough Florida is going to Conway as the two seed. So you got a pretty tough SEC team going to Conway in that regional. And if they win, they're not going to be hosting. They're, in fact, going to be on the road, potentially at number four Auburn in the super regional round.
Yeah, so we'll take a look at the field and the bracket as we move on. But yes, congratulations to Auburn baseball on being the four seed. And they will open with Central Connecticut. Yep. On Friday, that is Friday evening, should be a 6 o'clock first pitch.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot about Central Connecticut State. I know they have the nation's top hitter.
They got a guy hitting almost 460.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
So they will have to scout him very, very well. I'm going to do some capsules for tomorrow, so I'm starting work on that. They've got the 182nd RPI. They played one quad one game. They lost that. They played one quad two game. They lost that. So they haven't played.
Right.
A lot of teams the caliber that Auburn has played in the SEC, obviously. So this will be a big, big step up for them. And it should be a game Auburn can win. But as we saw 2 years ago against Penn, similar circumstance, and Auburn, did not play well and lost that game and ended up going 2 and out in their own regional. And then I think it was the year before that, they absolutely ran roughshod through
destroyed,
the
destroyed, yeah, the opposition.
Yeah.
I mean, you just never know. I mean, I did see, I've seen a couple of capsules on the teams, and Stetson has a couple of pitchers that have just eye-popping numbers.
Yeah.
And, of course, Stetson is the 3-seed NC State, the 2-seed
in game.
The Auburn Regional. Yes, yeah. That'll be the first game on Friday. There are still, and we were talking about this just before we came on the air, there are still some general admission all-session tickets that were available, at least as of midday today. So you can grab those. I mean, $75 will get you into any of the games. That's not bad at all.
Yeah. And I'm excited to see the crowd.
Me too.
See the atmosphere there. I just have a feeling that it's going to be special. They broke the attendance record for the fourth consecutive season.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I saw in one of the releases they're bringing in some extra seatings for students maybe on the outside or stands or something. I don't know if that's 100% correct or not, but I'd expect a record broken as far as attendance goes this weekend.
And they got a great deal for students out there too. It's like $10.
Yeah, that's great.
To get them the seating out there in the outfield.
Yeah,
so.
it should be a really great atmosphere. And I think the way Auburn's played at home, I think it's made a difference for them this season, and it could make a difference this weekend.
Oh, I agree. That's Brian Matthews. Again, it's not Monday, but it feels like Monday. We've got B-Matt in here on the Tuesday drive. Our regular Tuesday guest here in hour number one, Andy Burcham, had a staff meeting today. He usually has those on Mondays, but since yesterday was a holiday, they're doing that today. So Andy will join us tomorrow. But it's Bill, Dan, and Brian with Drew at the controls. That's sort of our regular Monday lineup here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Love for you to join in. Anything that you want to talk about sports-wise, I guess you have to say a little bit of a disappointing end for Auburn men's golf today. I mean, they were the 2-seed going into match play today, and Virginia knocked them off. So the Tigers not able to repeat as national champs, but I mean, getting to the NCAA championship and being there, and they were the most dominant team in golf this year.
A trip to trip to the Final Four was on the line for the winner of Auburn Virginia. Like that's the that you know they were getting to the so I guess you're with the quarterfinals.
Yeah, right.
It was Auburn got real close to continuing their title defense.
Team they beat to win the title a year ago. Virginia knocks them off this year.
It happens. It does. Like baseball sometimes, right? You
have an off day.
Any day. Yep.
Have an off day and you're done. And that's the way it is. Jackson Koivun though gets his PGA card.
That's great. Great for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was another really good season. Nick Kleinert saying, you had to admit it's disappointing when you feel like you're the best, but they just, it was a really, really unbelievable season. Just tough last day. So that's some of the headlines. Those are the local headlines. What we're waiting for, word from Tahad. Brian.
Yes, we are. And we should have that answer within the next 29 hours or so.
If you don't, you have your answer.
Yeah, that is right.
If there's no update in the next 29 hours, he's still in the draft, and that's the end of his college basketball career.
Tomorrow, 10:59 Central is the deadline for Todd.
If you want to see him continue to play college basketball.
30 and a half hours.
Okay.
I want to give that extra hour and a half because
– may need
There's never been any indication that Tahad was going to make a decision early, though.
No, and I felt all along that he would return. I think top 20-ish is the cutoff there. That's sort of what Bruce Pearl has mentioned. That's what we've heard. And I just don't know that he's going to get a guarantee to be picked that high. We'll see. All it takes is one team, and I know he's been active with some workouts with teams here over the last few days.
Oh, yeah, he's had quite a few lately.
Although even if it's one team making a promise in the late 20s, to take him, that's a bit of a gamble too because that team could, things could change between now and draft night for that team or someone could slip that they didn't realize was still going to be there, or they could get a trade offer. Like, there's, you know, I think that it would, again, I it's all speculation as far as what it would take for Tahad to decide to stay in the draft, but I wonder if he would want more of a consensus that that's where he would go, you know, and multiple teams sort of. I know he's worked out for a couple of teams privately in the last, you know, in the last week and a half.
Brooklyn,
he's been linked.
I believe it. Atlanta. Was
Toronto,
was
I think, is also Toronto, like a couple teams have been linked to Tahad, but no, I just, I mean, it's. I wonder sort of what it would take, you know, what kind of commitment he would want to decide to stay in the draft, and if one team would be enough for, you know, to change or to firm up. What's a huge decision, you know, for a guy who would be one of the top players in college basketball next season if he decided to come back.
And a lot of players in his similar position are starting to come back. You saw them come back last year, so I still think there's reason for confidence there, but you just never know.
And today, let's see, another player that there's actually, it's not just rumblings about. I mean, it was written as PJ Haggerty committing to Kansas State today, and one of the stories that I read about that decision said that Auburn had some contact to him about the possibility of him coming to Auburn if Tahad Pettiford didn't return. Right. So, do you take that as a positive, or is this something that is just maybe PJ Haggerty just decided this is where he wanted to go? I mean, you can sort of look at it as a thing where, well, Auburn still feels like he's coming back. So PJ Haggerty wanted to go ahead and have a place, you know, already lined up when he decided to pull out of the NBA draft.
I'd be careful about using the PJ Haggerty decision to forecast Tahad.
Yeah.
But if Tahad decides to come back, one would think maybe Haggerty was tipped off as to what Tahad was going to do and made his decision accordingly. It takes a guy off the board that a lot of folks thought would be one of those players that Auburn would pursue if they needed a Tahad Pettiford replacement after the decision today or tomorrow from Pettiford, just like when Boogie Flan went to Florida last week and people thought that was...
Well, that's just because they were the biggest names out there, and you felt if Auburn didn't get Tahad, they'd aim for the biggest prize possible.
You don't have a decision yet from R.J. Lewis, the guard from St. John's, who went into the portal and the draft, and is also sort of in the same boat, where I think there would be, unlike Tahad, he's in the portal. So if he decides to come back to college basketball, if he makes a decision in the next day and a half to come back to college basketball, he will be able to do whatever he wants, go wherever he wants, in pursuit of the best situation for next season. Tahad is choosing between the NBA draft and Auburn, so it's a little bit different as far as, you know, what Tahad gets. But I would think that if Tahad stays in the draft and R.J. Lewis doesn't, that's a person that I think folks will draw a lot of. They will think that Auburn is a landing place, a potential landing place for Lewis. You know, they would make sense for each other. But the cleanest version of this for Auburn,
Tahad comes back,
is Tahad Pettiford returning. Yeah, yes. Because without Tahad Pettiford, you're in the market for a replacement. And with PJ Haggerty going to Kansas State, one of those potential replacements is off the board. They don't make that many aircraft carriers. They don't make that many guys like a Tahad Pettiford, who have shown that they can be the best guard on a really good team. And if you suddenly find yourself without a player like that, it's a big hole to fill.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, we're just getting underway. John, hang on. Don't want to get too far behind, but we want to give you plenty of time. So we'll get to our first break here this afternoon. We'd love for you to join in. John is up first, but you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Right back with more of the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian, come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. As always, thanks for taking my call. And thanks to Pat and Dan and those fine folks at Skybar for sponsoring the callers. I tried to stay off the internet today, but somebody sent me a text earlier after Tuberville did announce he's run for governor, that Bruce Pearl, through the Republican Party, wants to run to replace Tuberville in the Senate. Has anybody else heard anything like that?
Yeah, so there is a report from a Semaphore, I believe, is the outlet that had a couple of quotes about the possibility that Bruce Pearl could be seen as a replacement should Tommy Tuberville run for governor in 2026, and now it seems like Tommy Tuberville will be, he's expected to run for governor.
He let it, I think,
the website launched today, right? Mm-hmm.
The Byron Smokehouse made his formal announcement today.
I'll read the tweet from Semaphore earlier today. One of the names being floated is Auburn men's basketball coach Bruce Pearl. One person familiar with the situation said they heard Pearl plans to run. He was on Capitol Hill last week. He's outspoken about politics on his
social media,
Twitter. It's a
later date. Would Auburn just make Stephen the coach, or if coach, I mean, how would that, would we go out for a national search this late in the day?
You know, we were just talking about that before we came back from the break, John, and the gubernatorial race is next year. So I wonder, you'd think about coaching and announcing, not making it official or something like that. I that's a very good question. I don't know exactly how the timing, would be there if that were to be the case.
Tommy Tuberville did. He's quoted in the Semaphore story saying that he doubts Bruce Pearl would get in. Quote, the compensation is a little bit different. I wouldn't let him do it because he did such a good job at Auburn and we need him there. Unquote. That was. What Tommy Tuberville told this website about it. Bruce Pearl could not be reached for comment for the story despite several attempts.
Well, I got somebody texted me a link of 1819 News. I don't know what that outfit is, but I'd never heard of it before. But they said a lot of chatter about Bruce being the replacement. So I knew he was political, but I never really thought of him as a politician. But
yeah, and I wonder where the chatter is originating, John. I mean, that I don't know. I have heard of that publication, and it's got some stuff that's out there at times. I can't really tell you about the legitimacy or anything.
Now Semaphore is
I'm talking about the 18.
Yeah, Semaphore is a real outlet plugged into sort of Washington insiders and stuff. Though I wouldn't.
I mean, I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
That Bruce's name would be mentioned in that because he is very he's very outspoken on social media about his beliefs, and that's absolutely fine.
He is chairman of the U.S. Israel Education Association and has made repeated trips to Capitol Hill for different reasons.
A few weeks ago, all right. Well, I just wanted your opinion. I have heard all along that Bruce has really wanted to Steven to replace him when the time came. I hope the time isn't here yet.
Yeah, you're right. Me too, John.
All right, guys. Well, enjoy the show and War Eagle, and talk to y'all later.
All right, it's great hearing from you. I mean, and yes, I mean, I had not heard about that until a little earlier this afternoon. Heard Jacob and Christian talking about it, and it's like, yeah, but it's not the, it's not the most shocking thing that I hear his name is mentioned when Tubbs announces that he's running for governor and the seat's going to come open.
Well, and I do think people probably draw the connection that Tommy Tuberville himself was a popular coach who then pivoted to politics and has turned that into a successful run as senator and presumably the favorite to be the governor next year. And I don't think it's difficult to wonder if that I think Semaphore's article describes it as the coach to politician pipeline. If that continues with with Bruce Pearl potentially pursuing politics as his full time job,
hopefully he's pursuing Todd Pettiford more right now than he is that position. All right, so yeah, I mean that's out there, but I'm sure somebody will track Bruce down here before. Before too long.
So the timing on the, I believe Tuberville's term expires in 26 because he won in 20 and it's a 6-year term as senator.
Right.
And I believe that's when the gubernatorial election would be as well. So you'd be talking about somebody who would need to be available to campaign for November 26.
Right.
Which
I think there would be even if he were interested, I would think there'd be time to do that through the summer and fall into there.
Does this mean he has to move from Florida to Alabama now?
Who is he in this situation?
He's got plenty.
Tubbs has plenty of time.
And Bruce lives over by the dog grooming place, right?
You know, where he lives. But no, when I was saying I wonder where some of the chatter is coming from, I do think that it's also very interesting that here we are on the eve of the day when Todd Pettiford is supposed to be making a decision that some stuff comes out. I mean, I'm not being a conspiracy.
Yeah, this is the John Thrower in you coming
it
out,
is.
Thinking
it
that
is.
Alabama money people are involved in this. But if
you're an Alabama person, wouldn't you want to have this spread even more and more today, just to try to?
I suppose, is Tommy Tuberville involved in the conspiracy?
No, because Tubbs said stay.
Well, he launched his campaign today.
That's because he was planning on doing it. But if the
campaign doesn't launch today, then the Bruce Pearl chatter doesn't grow about the Senate seat being open.
Maybe it goes deeper than
we realize.
Yeah. Uh huh. All right, your theories and more, whatever.
Play the X-Files music.
Yeah, that's right. We need that here on the.
So what do you?
I almost said Monday.
What do you think? What do you think? Like, what's the thinking about Todd? I mean, I'm as nervous as I've been throughout the process.
Who was it? Was it Jason the other day? No, or was it Justin the other day?
Who said he's 60-40?
First saying 60-40?
He's been saying 60-40 the whole time.
I'm feeling 55-45.
Yeah. It's feeling coin flippy.
The closer it gets, you start getting more
worried. Yeah, that's right.
But most people haven't projected still around 35, 36, 37 in the draft. So that's not anywhere near where he needs to be.
No, he needs to have a first-round guarantee. Right. That's what he said.
But all it takes is one team. Guarantee. So that's where that doubt comes in. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It also, it probably wouldn't impact Tahad's decision too much because Bruce is still going to coach this season.
That's true.
Like, it seems like
Tahad, I don't think Tahad's planning. If Tahad pulls out of the NBA draft, it's not to come back for three more years.
Right. Although Bruce could. I mean, we're talking about during the commercial break. Like, if you're Bruce and you're doing this, I would wonder if you pull, like, who was it? Was it Jay Wright that bailed, like, right before the season started and gave his assistant?
If you're Bruce, you definitely stay. If you're thinking, if this is what you're going to do, you're not going to be reachable for the next couple of days.
No, you're not. No, no, you're out of touch for like Hall and Oates, right? Like you're out of touch for the next couple of.
You're out of touch. Yeah,
and hopefully Auburn's
be out of time too. That's
hopefully
right.
Auburn's not out of time when it comes to Todd Pettiford.
Oh my!
I can't go for that, Bill.
Yeah. No, no can do.
No can do.
All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Wow. We've got more music coming up a little later on in the show as
We've done that before with Foreigner, right,
yes,
where
we've
said a bunch of Foreigner songs.
Yep. Now, there are plenty of Hall & Oates that we can get to as
really
well.
Really good ones.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise?
Mentioned a couple of the pieces of NBA draft news. Didn't mention Condo.
Right.
Alex,
headed back to Florida.
Alex Condon returning to Florida. And I would think that among some of the other good news that Florida has received in the last couple of weeks, I would think they're your preseason favorite in the conference with the backcourt they have returned, or the backcourt they've gone and brought in, along with having Chinyelu and Hawk and now
Condon and the seven. Yeah.
They're going to be
and the big and
7 foot whatever 7'9"
and the
guy.
and the giant dude from Quebec. So I mean they've got a really impressive team and probably I would think that preseason favorite in the conference and maybe one of the top teams nationally in the next wave of polls we get about the college basketball season. And I would think that if Todd comes back, Auburn is knocking on the door of the preseason top 10.
Yeah, Auburn. I mean, they were top 15 in the last one we saw.
Right. So I would think that if Todd Pettiford returns, then Auburn's probably going to be a team on the rise in the next sort of projections. But yeah, Florida gets a couple of big pieces of news over the last couple of days. Boogie Fland and now they get Condo back.
Carter Knox is headed back to Arkansas.
Nice one for them too. Yeah, I'd say Arkansas and Kentucky were your highest ranked teams in most folks' polls. Going into the season, based on what those coaches had done in the preseason. Now, Todd Golden and Bruce Pearl are probably in that mix as well. Especially if Bruce gets good news about Todd Pettiford over the next day and a half.
All right. One of the things we haven't mentioned it on the air, but briefly just in passing said something during one of the breaks a little while ago. Memorial Day passes. That means it's time for the SEC spring meetings down in Destin.
That's right. And this is a really important week for those meetings. I think it's, I won't say it's certain, but I think it looks highly likely that they're going to approve a nine-game schedule in the 6-3-4 match.
I sure hope so. I really hope so.
And that would be six rotating opponents, three permanent opponents. And just like the 7-1 now, you would play every team in the SEC.
Twice in four years, guaranteed.
Guaranteed, yeah. So, and I think in that case, Auburn's permanent opponents would be Alabama, Georgia, and probably a team like Vanderbilt, just because they're trying to balance out the schedule. So if you have two really good opponents, the third opponent's not going to be, at least based on the last 4 or 5 years, however far they go back, as good as the other. So we'll see how that math works.
You can adjust that every so many,
every four,
you know, every
years,
six,
probably.
Eight, whatever right. year.
I would think that either Vanderbilt or State makes sense for Auburn, and the other one makes sense for Alabama.
Right.
Because
and since Alabama and Mississippi State are so close,
right, and Alabama's going to have Auburn and Tennessee,
right,
and the third one's not going to be LSU.
Right.
They're not going to preserve that. Now, when Tennessee was in the bottom half of the league,
right,
you could start arguing about could you do Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee as Alabama's third opponent. But now that Tennessee is firmly back in the top half and went to the playoff this past season, I would think that it's for Auburn. If you went to three permanent opponents and then rotating the other six, I would think that Alabama, Georgia, and either Vanderbilt or State makes sense. And then for Alabama, it's Auburn, it's Tennessee, and then it's the other of you know whoever you choose between. And like
well,
you said, Bill.
I don't know, Kentucky. They've done pretty good, I guess, so far. So
Kentucky's right around the middle.
I don't know who else will be down there.
But Vandy and State makes sense. And then, I mean, like you said, Bill, the fact that State and Alabama are so close to each other geographically,
right.
Mm-hmm. And Auburn has a strong Nashville presence.
Exactly, I was going to say that. Yes.
Like, I think maybe, yeah, those seem like
a perfect fit for Auburn.
Yeah, we're getting used to it. I mean,
Ole Miss is Auburn's third.
Auburn and Vandy will be playing again this year. This is the third straight year they played, isn't it?
Ole Miss is the third permanent opponent in basketball, or was during the previous version of the. I think they've updated it with Oklahoma and Texas in the league. But Ole Miss was Auburn's third permanent opponent in basketball, along with Alabama and Georgia. They were the third team that Auburn played every year, home and away. Ole Miss is they're top half of the league too. Like, it'd be cool to have Ole Miss as a permanent opponent home and away. I thought, they were missed on the schedule this past year. It's not a priority, and like certainly at the expense of Alabama. Like,
at the expense of Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. And the schedule's not balanced if your three permanent opponents are Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss. There was a time in the SEC when you could balance the schedules that way, when Ole Miss was closer to the bottom. On a regular basis, but not right now, not under Lane Kiffin, and not based on recent results. So that's probably not a game that you can resuscitate. Just like LSU, there's a lot of Auburn fans that love that LSU game when it was a yearly thing. It just it's just something that has to.
LSU took the place of Tennessee,
and LSU.
You know, for years it was Tennessee there, and then LSU took the place of them.
And I don't. And LSU can't. I mean, you don't find LSU fans that view. From my understanding, they don't view Auburn as a top three opponent. Like,
viewed Auburn.
Alabama, Ole Miss,
A&M's become a rival for them. Arkansas is a rival with the boom.
I don't know. Yeah. Auburn. There was a time during the 2000s when Auburn LSU decided the
West. Yeah, when you had divisions. Yeah.
There's no way they can do it now. It has to end. The other interesting thing I think with 9-game schedule is. Conference games. That only leaves 3 non-conference games. They're talking about doing the SEC Big Ten
challenge
thank you. Mm-hmm. So that would be a 10th game basically against the Big Ten. So that would only leave 2 of those kind of group of 5, homecoming type matchups, which I think people would enjoy, but they're just going to have to adjust to, your team maybe losing 3 or 4 games during a season and still being in the playoffs with a chance to win a national championship.
Well, the more that you see teams with 2 or more losses making the playoffs, I think people will adjust to it.
You're not going to get me to like it. You're not going to get me to like 8-4 contenders ever. I know we're there. I know we're.
What sport? Do you watch any other sport?
I know. That was one of the cool things about college basketball. So, anyways, or college football. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of the neat things about the sport. But I get that it's coming, and I would think that in the case of like the paycheck games, maybe one of them. Is if they're going to keep playing FCS opponents,
right?
Like one of them could be, one of them could be an FCS team. One of them could be a a mid major.
Sure.
Like that's where your one game against a Sun Belt or a Conference USA team, and then your other game could be especially. And I do like the in-state element of like if you're gonna do that, and throw some money and some resources and some and a spotlight to. One of the FCS programs competing in the state, that to me, if you're going to play a paycheck game, that at least gives it something of an element of a worthy cause.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and let's get back to it. And Rick is up next. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Bill. How's it going? I haven't talked to you.
No, man, it's been a while.
Well, I tell you what, I just got home today from Mexico Beach.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So nice. Okay, so I retired last Friday.
Oh, congratulations.
Nice. Way to go.
Well, kind of, at least from that job.
Right. I understand.
I'm going to start collecting. Okay. So my wife, when we were like poor grad students, we used to go to the El Governor Motel down in Mexico Beach.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know if any of you guys have been there, but it's a great place. And so we took me on a full circle trip, and we went back there. And now it's post hurricane. Now it's called the El Governor Resort.
Oh,
but we had the nicest suite in the whole place, which was okay. But it was so wonderful, So now I'm going to come, maybe, you know, let's go golf sometime. We'll talk later.
Yeah.
But
perfect.
I'm kind of embarrassed to say I haven't been to a baseball game all year.
Oh, man.
I've given my tickets away. It's just things here, things there, whatever. But I do have my tickets for this week and hopefully right. for next. And I'm super pumped. I think I'm going to move into the stadium after this year. Because I've been buying those K-Corner tickets yep. for all these years, so I would be in the system, right? So when I'm retired, I can start going to games all the time. So I am so pumped about, you know, everything I'm hearing you guys say. I was, like, sitting on my hands not ordering the Super Regional tickets, and I turned you guys on, and you were talking about it, and it was a deadline day, and I went home and I did it. And
yeah, it wasn't going to cost you right then anyway.
Nah, none of it does, but, man, I just have a really good feeling about this team, and we're getting ready to make a run. Because the last time we hosted a regional, we all know how miserable that one was, yeah. and Clemson lost, and we would have had an easy pass. Well, we thought, you know. But who did we lose to that first game that really screwed up?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes, and then Southern Miss had it. You know?
Yep.
So I really feel good about this one. I think it lines up really well for us. Butch has got the team peaking at the right time, which is something that Bruce is really good at doing. I'm really psyched. And to have it just come right after now, I have no more obligations to, you know, to get up every day and go to work.
Yeah. That's great.
I'm even more pumped. So how are you enjoying retirement, Bill?
Okay. Well, I mean, I still got this thing going, you know.
Wow.
But no, it's great. It's great. Now, the other things that keep us busy is now both boys have little girls. So we've got we got two granddaughters now. One's two.
I have a granddaughter too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean that keeps us pretty occupied. It seems like, and. Yeah, makes time fly by. So, but no, it's great.
Well, I'll tell you then, another thing that I'm going to do, drive by my house by the end of the summer. My lawn will look like the fairway at Grand National.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's sadly, that's been one of my goals too. So I got you.
That you haven't reached though, or what?
I got close a couple of times. I got a couple more weeds this year than I'm tolerant of.
All right, we'll be hanging out soon.
All right, man.
This weekend.
Good hearing from you, Rick.
Bye.
334-321-1390. We'll talk a little more about baseball when we come back. Let's get to our final break of hour number one here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one here of the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews, who's usually with us on Mondays, but since there was no show yesterday on Memorial Day, Brian... kind enough to join us here on the Tuesday Drive as we look toward the Auburn Regional, which starts this Friday over at Plainsman Park. Auburn will be playing Central Connecticut State in game number 2 on Friday, slated for 6 o'clock start. And we were just talking about it during the break. Butch Thompson hasn't really said how they're going to do the pitching. He said they're going to look at the matchups and do what's the best. He said they basically... they're not going to take anything for granted.
Right.
They want to do whatever they can to win each ball game. But you were just looking at Central Connecticut State and noting that their top two starters and their closer are all right-handed.
Yes, which is a really good matchup for Auburn's lineup.
Yes, indeed.
You know, the left-hand bats in Auburn's lineup are lethal. They can overwhelm teams. And we've seen the last couple weeks that left-handed pitchers against that lineup have been really difficult.
Yes.
That hadn't been the case all season necessarily.
No, but really good lefties. I mean, are going to be trouble for lefty laden lineups, sort of like Auburn's.
So, I mean, the perfect thing for Auburn, and we'll see how it works out. You know, it doesn't always work out that way. Is just to go out there and score some runs, and then, you know, they have a decision to make. But if they start, you know, Cam Tilley, see if they can get him to the fifth or sixth.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have a big enough lead, maybe they can bring in – maybe they don't have to bring in a Cade Fisher or one of their top guys to close it out. Maybe they can bring in another guy and save those guys for a potential, you know, Sunday, and if they have to go to Monday and still have some quality arms there.
Going to be really interesting. The NC State Stetson game – now, that's one of the things.
That's going to be a good game.
Yeah, I believe it. Now, and that will be really interesting to see. Do they throw their aces?
Right.
Because Stetson's ace has phenomenal numbers. He's got a sub-2 ERA.
Yeah.
If they go with him against NC State, then that obviously means he can't go in game two.
Right.
But if you're Stetson and you hold that guy back, and you lose game one,
then it's not looking
then,
good.
Then you're really you know, up against the wall.
I think 2-3s almost have to throw their ace on Friday. I think when you're a one, that's when you have a choice,
right?
And Butch Thompson, you know, as you said, he mentioned looking at the matchups. He said he felt like any of the three starters they've had could go any of the days.
Yeah, because of the way because you didn't have Dutton or Chatterton pitch
right.
in Hoover. But they threw a sim game, was it Saturday?
Yes. Dutton threw, and I put up a story this afternoon on it, Dutton threw three innings, and Chatterton also threw three innings, and I did a story on Dutton, and talked to some players and the coaches, and they all said that he threw really well, looked good, looked sharp, looked
fresh. That's
good.
So. I mean, because we were talking about it a week ago, wondering, you know, had he hit the wall, did he have tired arms, something like that, but the velocity didn't really show that.
Yeah, he just wasn't sharp. Yeah, and he has thrown 75 innings this season. In 3 years at LSU, he threw 75 total innings. Mm. So you can understand why he may have hit a wall a little bit late in the season. But hopefully, you know, he's through
that's
that.
That's why we really wanted to see him in Hoover, I think, for that reason, you know, to see, you know, sort of if it was something you can dismiss as just a couple of bad starts and a bump in the road or a sign of a postseason swoon, you know, an end of season swoon or something.
I really want him to have the weekend off or the week off or whatever myself, but I understand why they want him to just fight through it and push through it. But.
Sure. And so he's got, and now, you know, you haven't seen him play, you know, he's going to go out there with nearly 2 weeks of rest from the last time
it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it'll be 13 days.
Right? Yeah. And they did it. They did
no,
some
14
they did
days.
They did some inner squad, right? They, you know, they did some work. They did some work this, you know, this weekend
Saturday.
To, you know, try to keep guys sharp and fresh, but no, it's a huge, you know, a huge start when Auburn goes with Dutton again.
Yeah. And you know, they all three of those or more are going to have to perform well. They can't just rely on Dutton or Tilley or whoever, you know. Chatterton's going to have to perform well. The bullpen's going to have to perform well. And, you know, if it goes to Monday, they're going to have to find that fourth starter to step up and go out there and get it done for them.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, these teams, again, it looks like a pretty good matchup for Auburn. Yeah. I think Auburn got, of course, as the number four national seed, you should.
Right.
You know, you should have a pretty good situation. But it's funny, though, Dan. I mean, remember all the speculation of the, you know, bringing teams closer, you know, from closer to home, in closer proximity in. And I guess NC State? Is NC State closer than DeLand? I mean, it's not like there's anybody next door coming in.
No.
I think they did a better job of matching
I love
up.
It.
RPIs.
I think they did. And you know what else, though? This is really good for. This is good, I think, for Auburn fans.
I wonder how many
that are looking for tickets because I think there will be fewer.
Yeah,
people coming because of the distances.
I wonder how many regional choices they had as far as two seeds go. I mean, UCLA was the two seed a couple of years ago
Alabama's
when Auburn
Hattiesburg,
hosted.
Right?
Alabama's in Hattiesburg. You're not going to get Alabama. You know what I mean? You're not going to get an in conference two seed.
No.
Troy did not make the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Left out after
I think they were the first out
after
I talked to Barry this morning doing his show.
Oh wow,
it's heartbroken stuff over there because they were in the top 25 of a couple of polls for much of the season. Did not lose a series until the final series of the year. Probably, you know, looking back, I think they view the midweek losses to Alabama and Auburn as missed opportunities because a win in one of those games. They lost. I think they lost two.
Some close games.
I think they lost a game to Auburn and a game to Alabama that both had a lead change in the ninth. Like you lost, you know, the two games that you could have won in the ninth against tournament teams. You don't get as many opportunities against NCAA tournament teams when you're in the Sun Belt as you do in the SEC. And so, yeah, those games really mattered. And Auburn and Alabama ultimately winning may have kept Troy from making the tournament. And you've got Southern Miss and Coastal. But that's the only representation from the Sun Belt as the Trojans are one of the first teams out. Really, really tough break for a team that I think wouldn't have been all that shocking to see them in the Auburn Regional had they made the tournament. You know, coming from nearby.
And to be honest, I mean, it's nice seeing teams you don't see a lot of. Auburn played NC State at NC State in a regional a few years ago. It was one that I remember. Yeah. The big Canadian lefty hitting a big home run there, if I remember correctly. What's his name?
I can see him.
Eddie Julian?
Yeah, Edouard Julian. Yeah. Just knocked the cover off the ball that night. Yeah.
All right, we are halfway done here on the Tuesday. Again, I'm going to do it before it's done. Almost said Monday a few times. The Tuesday Drive. Love for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. A rainy Tuesday afternoon. It has rained a lot over the last few days, and I don't believe it's done for the rest of the day. Hopefully, a little later on this week, things are going to clear up. It looks like it on the long-range forecast. We've got big baseball coming up, as we've been talking about later on this week, with the Auburn Regional, the NCAA baseball tournament. With eight SEC teams hosting regionals, six of them being national top eight seeds who will have the opportunity, if they win their regional, of hosting super regionals.
Yeah, it's going to be a terrific tournament. And what I like, I think, the most about this year's road to the College World Series is I don't think there's any dominant teams. There's not two, three, or four guys.
I think you're right.
Teams you can say they're the favorites to win this, or they're better than everybody else. I think it's a wide open field. I think any team can get hot and make a run, including Auburn.
I mean, Auburn beat Vanderbilt, right? I mean, Auburn won the series.
Took two out of three in Nashville.
Yeah.
And swept LSU.
It's a Vanderbilt team that's the number one team overall in the draw.
Number one overall seed.
Something crazy, by the way. Like is it 19 or 20 straight tournaments for Vanderbilt?
Yeah.
Like, you know, just
amazing.
An amazing run that they're on. Mm-hmm. But no, I think that the one thing we learned in the SEC, like, as good as Vanderbilt or Texas or Georgia or LSU could look at different times, those teams could all blow a tire and have a bad game, and Auburn showed that they can compete with any of them.
Absolutely. Especially Auburn's lineup. I mean, when it gets hot, they can really score some runs. They can score runs really fast and really just bury a team. And, you know, when you've got Dutton going, leading that pitching staff, they can be pretty lethal too. That'll be important this weekend to see. You know, and Chatterton had the 23 or so innings in a row without giving up a run. It'll be interesting to see if they can get back to some of that and maybe get on a little bit of roll themselves.
Yeah, what is crazy is when you look at the field. What was it, 13 SEC teams? Is that right?
Yes, that's a record 13.
Because, there are only – I was just looking through the regionals, and that's how I was double-checking. Only three of the 16 regionals don't have an SEC team in it.
It's hard to believe.
That is crazy. I mean, you've got the UCLA regional, and then, I mean, two of them are out west. the UCLA and Oregon State regionals, and the, well, the third one, they're all three out west. UCLA, Oregon, and Oregon State are hosting regionals, and those are the only three that don't have SEC teams in them.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is how strong this league is once again in baseball.
And Auburn is matched up with the Coastal Carolina region, which has Florida in it. So that's going to be an interesting battle between those two teams.
Yeah, and Dan was mentioning earlier, I mean, Coastal was a team that thought, you know, that felt like they were in the hunt for one of the top eight national seeds.
I wonder if on the bus ride, I mean, they were already pretty fired up to win the Sun Belt tournament, but that bus ride home from Montgomery to Conway, I have to imagine maybe they thought they had done enough to you know, play their way into a top eight seed. It's not the way it goes for Coastal. They still are hosting this weekend. Like we said earlier, Florida's a tough two seed. Like
Florida's a tough two seed. I'll tell you what, East Carolina is no pushover. Yeah. That's the three seed.
It's a loaded region they got to deal with there in Conway. And if they win, they could potentially be coming to Auburn and playing an SEC team in
Super Regional. Hopefully somebody's coming to Auburn to play a Super Regional.
Right.
I mean, that's the most important thing right now is Auburn take care of business in the regional. And again, as we mentioned earlier, there were some general admission tickets still available. $75 gets you an all sessions pass and for the regional.
General admission is nice at Auburn.
You're not kidding.
All these options. You can be up on the on top of left field. You can be down in the what do they call the area with the chairs?
With the big breezeway underneath the skyboxes. Yeah, I mean, that is great.
A big area down the down
yeah,
the
there are areas. You're not stuck standing in the sun if you don't want to.
Nope.
I mean,
they don't have any of the fancy Brian Matthews seats available. You know, in the palatial.
Brian Matthews sits way down the right field line and can't see a thing from his spot. So.
Brian came and worked from our season.
From the Bill Cameron season.
I had like three innings of great baseball this season in the Bill Cameron
seats. In the Bill Cameron seats, yeah.
Yes.
Hey, beautiful. We're really looking forward to the atmosphere this weekend.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that place is no question is a home field advantage for Auburn, and I think it's really going to be rocking.
I do too.
This weekend. We'd love to hear from you here in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join us by calling The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron.
Let's see. We talked some baseball. We can get back into it and talk a little bit more about that. But go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask Brian if there were any headlines coming out of the what was going to be a big recruiting weekend. And
well, remember
and a
this past
talk.
Weekend there weren't any recruits this weekend because of Memorial Day.
But there's talk.
But you
of,
had a big yeah. one last weekend and another one this weekend.
Big one this weekend. I think Caleb put out a list today of the expected visitors. 8, 10, 12. It looks like 13 again. Baker's dozen just like 2 weeks ago. Landon Duckworth is a top quarterback target. I think he's from Jackson, Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not as up to speed on all the recruits Auburn's going after because I'm with baseball and football and all that stuff. But Parker Pritchett's an offensive lineman already committed to Auburn. Hezekiah Harris is a very talented defensive end committed to Auburn. Jamari Matthews is an edge rusher that's committed to Alabama, but coming in, I believe he's a top in-state player. Jacquez Wilkes is an edge rusher linebacker from not too far north of Auburn, in-state player, a top guy. Anthony Davis, another top linebacker. And Daryl Bell is a nickel defensive back who's committed to Florida State coming in. So really another really great list of recruits followed up by 2 weeks ago, which included – 2 5-stars, a couple more top 100 players, and a bunch of 4-stars. So this looks like a very similar group.
Yeah, and as we were saying, I mean, it's important now to get these guys in because these kids are going to be making up their minds here in the next month or so, most likely.
Yeah, Auburn has this weekend scheduled, and I think the next two or three weekends going into June. And then after that, then you're going to wait for a lot of decisions, a lot of commitments breaking out.
Meanwhile, you've got the late additions from football already on campus,
already here.
And the basketball newcomers are coming in as well.
Yes, they were all due over the weekend. Basketball, football guys.
About a half dozen of them.
Yeah, there were five football guys here. The two Smith brothers,
right?
Omar Mabson from Auburn High School. And then Jacoby Ward, the offensive lineman, and then the young offensive lineman, Khalil Ellis, who reclassified. Or Kyle Ellis?
Kale Ellis.
There you go. Sorry. So those are the five guys that came in for Auburn late. And, we saw Malcolm Simmons last year come in late and make a big impact.
Oh, so no question.
Don't necessarily count any of these guys out.
And then,
and their quarterback, too. The
Ashton Daniels.
Yeah, Ashton Daniels, another one. So, I think Auburn's just got about everybody in, as far as I know, as far as transfers and signees. So, now it's just about going through summer workouts and doing some player-led stuff and whatever you can do during the summer and getting ready for fall camp.
You know, it's we've touched on this a couple of times, but something I think that at times goes a little unnoticed is the job that Auburn's done of getting these guys in. I mean, you used to be there'd be one or two that
or more.
There'd be a bunch that you'd be holding your breath on, hoping they make it, and there'd generally be one or two that didn't.
And now it's a surprise if anybody doesn't make it.
That's right.
So that's because schools do their homework, and I think high schools or junior colleges are better set up now to know what needs to get done to make sure these guys are qualified under the NCAA current rules.
Yeah, so it's getting closer. I mean, we're in double digits as far as days away from the start of football season.
I know.
And then with all the basketball players coming in, man, everybody's got to be waiting. Everybody's waiting for Tahad right now.
Yeah, nine newcomers waiting on Tahad and still looking for that big man to add to the roster. The Jokic kid from our young man, I should say, from Serbia. As a top target to continue to keep an eye on. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and we were talking about it a little while ago. I mean, because the rules have changed a little bit. There's a little more. It's a little more involved getting some of the international players in, but they're also under a little bit different type situation where they're almost like free agents till they're enrolled in class.
Right.
I mean, you've seen players that have committed to one place, international players that have committed to one place and then end up going another place. It's not like they're not signing those grants and things like like the high school and junior college
and
players.
Especially right now when kids are making the decision to go or not go in the draft and you're trying to fill out a roster and you need one or two players that you've got to have.
Yep.
Things can change quickly when it comes to the few available players, at least, that schools really, really want. So we'll see how things go. I think Auburn's in position to get basically, some good players. And if Tahad was to declare for the draft or stay in the draft, they would have that pool of money they had, already committed to him available for another guard. So it's not like you're losing that. So. But I know they're expecting, or they're hoping to get Tahad back here within the next 24 or so hours.
Saw a couple of quotes from Destin from Kirby Smart earlier today.
I didn't see those.
So this was Ross Dellinger has this on
does a great job.
On Twitter and earlier today. Kirby Smart at SEC spring meetings just gave a deep argument for a single transfer portal in January. Portal timing continues to be up for debate, as many administrators believe a March, April, or May portal is better to align with the academic calendar and House rev share cap year. Quote, the biggest decision that has to be made in college football right now is when is the portal window and is there one or two, unquote. That was from Kirby Smart earlier today.
This is not going to happen. I know people are talking about it, but you've got to have two transfer periods because you have two different semesters where you have an off time. And if you just try to take away one, they're just going to get sued and they're going to lose. And then it's going to be completely unregulated again. So tighten up some of these transfer portal times
The problem is that you can't have, I think the problem is trying to balance the current postseason calendar with a December or January portal window because you have...
Yeah, the postseason isn't over during the first term. It runs into the second term.
What would be ideal would be if you crowned a champion by Christmas and then opened the portal up and had had people had the season over.
Get 15 days or something there, because if you could have your mind. Now, when is Kirby talking about? When did he say?
Kirby seemed to. Now Dellinger says Kirby made the argument for a January portal window. Well,
that's fine, but you're going to have the spring one too. Now, January is fine because most schools don't start until the 10th
Usually, if you're in school by the 20th, you're okay.
See,
may have missed a week of class or something.
It feels like the argument for a single portal window would be spring, right? Because then
the school year.
Because then you don't have a portal window
you can stop players from transferring after their fall semesters.
And the other thing is coaches absolutely damn sure don't want all the players transferring at the end of the spring.
Right, because they have.
Because then you get, what do you do?
Right.
Then how do you get ready? That goes to what Hugh Freeze has talked about, having a summer camp, having, you know, the, what's the term that I'm.
What, OTAs?
Which is a great idea.
Yes.
And
having
that should do.
To prepare you
for the
season.
Spring. Right?
Yes.
Because it does what you just said it does, and it also allows players that were injured during the season need surgery, need to rehab, that time to get better so they can go through those OTAs, practice period, and not have to sit out of spring. Was it 6 or 7 key players for Auburn?
Yeah,
potential starters
or
so were out this spring because of little nicks and surgeries and rehabs they had to go through.
The desire to have players enrolled in January for their new teams. Like the problem is, but having the post, like, you don't have that in basketball.
No,
you don't have the college.
Well, all you need is for them to be enrolled and working out immediately prior to the season. I mean, that or at some point have them enrolled and being able to go through practice, whether it's spring or summer. If you didn't have spring and you did have summer workouts, then you wouldn't have to have them enrolled in January. They could be enrolled in May or June.
Right, which is the argument for a May portal window. But the problem is that you still have, I mean, like Brian said, you're probably not going to be able to keep guys. Like, guys are going to want the freedom to leave in December, January, and that's just always going to, I mean, as long as it's a 16-team playoff, which is we're barreling towards that. I don't know how you balance those two things in a way that's going to keep everybody happy.
Well,
I don't know the compromise that
the biggest problem is that the schedule doesn't match the academic calendar. I mean, they just don't match, and they're not going to. I mean, unless you move football season starting in like the 1st of August.
Right.
You'd have to have your season start August 1st and end before December 1st, so that your playoffs would be done before the end of the year.
Be a bad thing at all. I wouldn't be against that.
That's what you could do then, because now classes start early in August anyway.
I remember when I started Auburn at 85, they were 2 games before school started, if I remember
correctly. Labor Day come, and then there'd be a couple of weeks before classes started. Yep.
God, I miss those days.
Yep. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I get why, if you only want one portal window, I understand why January would make some sense, because then the players the players would all be able to be with their new programs for the spring semester, and coaches wouldn't have to worry about players leaving after spring practice is over and going somewhere else. The problem with the January window would be you still have teams playing in the college football playoff at that point, and the window wouldn't be like the other issue is for guys who want to leave teams that are in the college football playoff, right? Who was it? Was it who lost their backup quarterback? Was it Penn State? Like, someone had to, like, or SMU? Like, one of the teams that was in the playoff had to, the backup quarterback, thought, like, the best thing for me for next season is to go in the portal now and leave my team. It's like you want to avoid situations like that. Like you said, I don't know. I don't know the compromise that keeps everybody happy on that front.
All right, we need to get to our first break of hour number 2. Daniel, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
BN 106.7.
Well, he hasn't told us yet whether he's entering the race, but we're glad that Bruce brought us back here on the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, and let's get to the Drive Hotline. And Daniel is up next. Hey, Daniel.
Gentlemen, I hope y'all are staying dry today. Over the long weekend, just began thinking a little bit, and with all the kids gone, we were like, hey, let's go downtown. So family and I went downtown, and we were able to see the new scoreboard and just the new video board and everything. Mm-hmm. And man, how exciting that is. You know, even in looking in the architecture, I was wanting to ask you guys, does it look like there's going to be room? What's kind of the plans for underneath it? Are those going to be like future boxes? I don't know if you guys can speak to that a little bit, because the structure, you know, is almost just built, it looks like, to be multiple levels.
But absolutely, I can't find
any renderings.
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen renderings. I've read and heard some of the comments. I mean, it's going to be space that can be used by the university, not just athletics, not just football.
Yeah.
I mean, they are going to be able to have meeting spaces. I'm sure there's premium areas. Right. For athletics, but there will also be areas that the university can use for very special occasions and meetings and conferences, things like that as well. So it is definitely in the plans to be a multi-purpose area there under the scoreboard.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess they're going to close it up. I guess with that kind of gray silver siding. I love that it looks the same as the original big one, but just didn't know what you guys thought about that.
I tell you, the only negative, I hadn't thought about this. One of my sons said, "You know what, Dad? We're still not going to be able to see it. Our seats are at the top row under the west upper deck.
Right.
So we haven't." From those seats, you can't see the upper two-thirds of the scoreboard in the south.
Yep.
And now the one on the north, it's even higher up.
That's right.
So there are some
seats.
You got
a little TV you can see, right?
But they don't show that's on the scoreboard.
Okay. They're just showing
But, I mean, I'm not complaining that we have covered seats.
Right,
but,
you're not getting wet or whatever.
But yeah, but that's the only drawback that I've heard.
Man, well, I was excited for you guys. And
yeah, I thought for sure on the other end we'd get to see.
Oh, I think, you know what? It'll look good from the press box, potentially.
Oh, we'll be able to see.
If from the little Lego block on top of the stadium, we'll be able to see straight across to the to the press box, to the video. And I think the folks that were sitting in front of us, Bill. The people that have their backs to the
ones like in section 16.
Yes, the folks in the who have their backs to
your folks.
I know some people who sit over there, and they you know, folks that had their back to the video board. I think they've missed out on the full stadium experience because so much of it is oriented from the video board, and now being able to see it from almost anywhere in the stadium, being able to see one of the two screens, I think will be an upgrade for folks at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Appreciate the call, Daniel. That's a good point. Yeah, it's cool to be able to see how that is. It is a very impressive.
It is. It looks nice.
Thing.
And you know, I think every addition you're going to see to a athletic facility now is going to center around some sort of premium type seating or premium areas, whatever it is, clubs, way for Auburn, or really a lot of schools now are just trying to find as many ways as possible to generate more money to pay for this revenue sharing that is coming July 1st, assuming the House settlement is pushed through.
I've been waiting for that one for a while now.
Hasn't happened yet.
Dan, didn't you think it had happened? It would have happened by now.
You're talking about the House?
The agreement, yeah. The judge.
I know that somebody said something. I think Sankey had a quote about having expectation of this week being.
Golly,
I know it gets a little bit like a Beckett play where we're just sort of waiting every single week for this thing's supposed to kick in July 1st. By the way, I know there have been pieces of news that sort of.
Yeah, well, we're getting close to June 1st. Weekend?
And you've had piece of news where there are different. I think A&M has put every athlete on scholarship, like they've done away with partials, and they've gone to, and a couple other schools in the SEC have done that in the last couple of months, sort of in anticipation of the House settlement requiring that. I know there have been some mid majors that have gotten rid of scholarship sports in the last couple of months. Of course, we had the, what was the team from the NCAA tournament that just dropped down?
Oh yeah, Saint, out of the Saint Francis.
Saint Francis dropped out of the D1 level completely. They're just going to compete as a D3 school from now on. So I mean, it still seems like we're veering towards a world of direct compensation from schools to athletes. It's just, yeah, you don't have the word on the House settlement quite yet. The quote I was trying to find, Bill, from Greg Sankey in Destin. We might have been talking about this during commercial break. I don't care. It's because we talked about some of it on the air. But the quote about the traits in the college football playoff that Sankey would like to see. Quote, "I think the word hope is at the center. How do you bring people into the conversation late in the season in a changing environment? So the idea of could you have play-in type games continues to populate itself before you're in the college football playoff selection. Yeah. That's about building interest and giving hope.
That's about making money is it what is. That's about, Greg. And that's
what
have
those play-in games.
That's what and that's what the SEC and the Big Ten want to do. And the one of the reasons, and we weren't talking about this on the air, but Brian, you're absolutely right. The one of the reasons that the SEC and the Big Ten want four guaranteed spots is that would guarantee the ability to have those play-in games between 3-6 and 4-5.
Which I know it is a money grab, but to me it would also be exciting.
Oh, it would be fun to watch. Right. I mean, it is. I mean, it's both. It's going to make a lot of money, and it'll be fun to watch. And if your league is good enough, then maybe the 5 or 6 team, the team that loses could still get in too. I mean, it would suck if you're number 3 in the conference and you lose that play-in game, but maybe if you're good enough, you'll get 5 teams.
Well, there will be, there should be at-large spots. I know they're holding, two or three for Notre Dame, depending on what format's agreed upon.
4-4, 2-2-1.
3?
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. 3 at-large. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And, you know, there's a good chance when you look at the standings that there's not a big difference. You know, there's going to be a bunch of teams at the top within a game or two of each other, right? So it's not going to be like some 5-6 team that's in sixth place, you know, playing a 10-2 team.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think.
Yeah, it's pretty impossible.
Look at the standings from last year just to be sure before
You might have a sixth place team that's 7-5 or something. And just make sure that they lose. Just they're in that play-in game. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break.
The one really interesting piece, I know we got to get to Jake on the other side of this, but Sankey, and this is from Pete Thamel's story yesterday about Sankey, some of Sankey's quotes in Destin. Sankey did make clear his disappointment in the reactions of the ACC and Big 12 commissioners to the move to a straight seeding model last week. Both commissioners referenced the macro good of the game in responses.
Yeah, but they went along with it, though,
The ACC's Jim Phillips saying it's a responsibility he takes very seriously, and the Big 12's Brett Yormark saying he hopes what's best for college football is the priority in discussions moving forward. Sankey felt those responses from the leagues were coordinated and remarked, quote, "I don't need lectures from others about the good of the game. I don't lecture others about the good of the game. And coordinating press releases about the good of the game, you can issue your press statement. I'm actually looking for ideas to move us forward."
Yeah, okay.
Unquote.
Greg Sankey's done a fabulous job for the SEC. But let the SEC have a down year this year, and the seeding not go the way they want. Oh, then you're going to hear screams from the SEC. Look, don't be chiding someone else for being disappointed.
Delicate.
That they lost that automatic bid.
Yeah. I liked the game Sankey was playing at Media Days last year, where he kept talking about how Georgia should have made the playoff with the unspoken part being instead of Texas. But of course, he can't say that at SEC Media Days in Texas.
No. Real quick, the 3-6 last year would have been Tennessee, Ole Miss, 4-5, Alabama, LSU.
Yeah, that
all those
been
teams
good.
Have 9 or more wins.
Yeah, that would have been good. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jed Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side, so stick with us.
online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And it is Tuesday, and that means it's time for our weekly visit with Jake Crane of Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Man, it's going fantastic. Ready for some postseason college baseball here coming up. Probably, in my opinion, the most underrated postseason in all of sports. Even though college baseball has been gaining in popularity, I think betting on it has helped that. But, man, what Butch Thompson's done and this team has done is really impressive.
Well, I mean, you look, and once again, the SEC dominates the national seeds. Six of the top seven national seeds are from the SEC, and Auburn, the four seed overall, and a very pleasant surprise to see Auburn as the number four national seed behind Vandy, Texas, and Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, I had a good feeling they were going to be a top eight national seed. I didn't think they were going to be four when that got called. But, I mean, nothing shocking. I mean, look at the strength of schedule. Look at the RPI. I mean, look at what they did in a league that is just stacked from the top to the bottom. I mean, really outside of Missouri, but... at the end of the day, man, I think this is Butch Thompson's best coaching job since he's been at Auburn. I'm interested to see the way the pitching rotation gets handled this weekend, and I like the draw.
Yeah,
I like the draw if they make it to the Supers as well. So just an incredible job by him and Coach Nonnemaker and his staff. It's been fun to watch.
Any other teams from the SEC that you look at as real threats to not just make it out of regional play, but maybe win the whole thing?
Well, I mean, Dan, you know, I'm not even sarcastic. I think any one of them could get hot and go on a run. I think Florida got a good draw going to Coastal, even though I got a ton of respect for Coastal. I mean, Vandy, obviously, with what they did towards the end of the year, we know how talented they are. The power is really starting to come back for them a little bit. They can make a run. If Tennessee can field a ground ball, they should be in a position. But I look at LSU. I look at that path. I mean, we had Kendall Rogers on today from D1 Baseball, and he agreed that LSU had, you know, the quote-unquote easiest path. But, I mean, when you have a league that's this talented and this deep, I mean, you got Georgia. Bama is a quality club. It's just incredibly impressive, man.
Yeah, I heard some of the guys, you know, the guys talking about it yesterday. It is a year where it seems like it's pretty wide open. I mean, there is not that just super team that everybody goes, wow, here is your odds on this team is the team to beat. And Auburn's got as good a shot as anybody.
No, they do. It's just going to come down, can the pitching hold up?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing in the format that you play in this tournament, guys are going to have to step up regardless, whether that's in the regionals, whether that's in the supers, in a tight spot. And then obviously if you're able to get deep enough in Omaha, kind of what that does to your arms. But it's funny, you know, on one side, it is as wide open as it's been in since I can remember. But then on the other hand, I thought the committee did pretty much a perfect job. I mean, you can make an argument for UConn, maybe some seating issues here or there, but it's kind of that weird combination of very wide open, a lot of parity, but also the selection committee, I thought, did a pretty good job. I mean, some people will argue Georgia Tech, you know, didn't get enough respect. At the end of the day, though, everybody can't be happy. But it's going to be fun, man. I'm just wondering, is this another year where we see a four seed, you know, make a deep run? Not Fresno State level, where you go on to win the national championship, but there's some teams, man. You look at even a team like Columbia that could be pretty sneaky.
It was a couple of years ago when Ole Miss, they weren't a four, but they were the last team in, right? They were the three seed that had, you know, played, had to play their way in over the last couple of weeks of the season, and they ended up going on a run that culminated with the championship. I mean, so this is a sport where a team can get hot at the right time, and, you know, especially if they figure things out in the rotation. We've seen some very unlikely runs all the way to Omaha in the college. I agree with you, Jake. It's one of the best, especially this upcoming weekend when you get regional play and you get these matchups you never get in the college baseball season, and you get these crowds that are just going to be at a fever pitch. It's one of the best weekends in sports.
Yeah, and look, I think the College World Series, I think Omaha is it's top four for me. I was lucky enough to go a couple times, and that venue was just incredible. And that's counting whether you drink the Jell-O shots or not. So, yeah, it's the aesthetics of it. I mean, it's hard not to be romantic about baseball. We all know that. But, you know, from the walk-offs, from the comebacks, to the dominant pitching performances, it's and there's so many games, too. It's kind of like the opening weekend or end of the week in the NCAA basketball tournament. Everybody's alive. And in this one, you can stay alive longer. It's not one and out.
That's right. It's double elimination. That's why you were talking about the pitching. It's going to be interesting to see. We're thinking that that Butch is going to go ahead and stick with his regular rotation and throw Cam Tilley out there against Central Connecticut. Don't know that much about them. They haven't played. They've only played one quad one and one quad two game all year.
Yeah, well, all I know about them, they're in the center of Connecticut. That's about it.
Pretty good guess. Yeah,
that's about my level of knowledge. But
is it like Michigan, where they have Eastern and Western and Northern and Southern? They have directional Connecticut schools. I was not plugged in to what they got going on. I didn't realize Connecticut was so big; it could have a central. Right?
Like I thought it was just
Northern Connecticut State, Southern Connecticut.
Yeah, I thought it was just
didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just they don't have the other three. It's just East. But, yeah, look, I mean, Coach Thompson, obviously, you know, he's going to do what he thinks best. That makes sense to me, though, right?
Yeah.
Sticking kind of with what you've been doing. And that way you set up, you know, Dutton in that game to kind of put you in a position where you have to, you know, lose two to be out of it at home. You know, what I find interesting, though, is situationally, right? Like, you know, pun intended, let's run the ground ball out. Let's say you beat Central Connecticut State game one. You throw Dutton game two, and you're into the fourth inning, and you're up 11-0 or 8-1. How long do you ride Dutton knowing you may need him later? Do you go ahead and take the chance of taking him out, saving his arm a little bit? This is the chess match that I love to see dictated by score during these regionals. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that one, Brian, I'm just guessing – you go ahead and go a couple more with Sam, because I doubt I doubt that Butch is going to run him back out there.
Mm-mm.
You know, on short rest.
No, he hadn't done that all season.
Nah.
So, yeah,
yeah, but you're right. That is a really interesting thing, though. Yeah,
yeah. Well, the reason I'm saying that is because, and I watched Florida do this a couple years ago, with their Friday night guy, but it's just, you know, pitch count, the amount, where you're at. You know, obviously you wouldn't want to run him back out there if he's, you know, 65 pitches in at that point. But if the circumstance does bring itself to it, and Auburn's not super deep, right, in the pen or really in the starting rotation. So, you know, if you got three guys that you throw out there on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and you're like, all right, hey, these guys got a chance pitching the bigs one day, I think it's different. But it's an interesting situation. I hope they're beating everybody 11-0 in the fourth, and we don't have to worry about it anyway.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, in the meantime, between now and Friday, I mean, SEC meetings going on down in Destin. Any expectations of some exciting news?
Well, look, I don't think it's going to be anything, you know, groundbreaking per se. I mean, after the Texas and Oklahoma announcements coming to the SEC, I don't think that was during the meetings down there, but I don't know if anything will ever top that. What I do find fascinating.
That was the first day of media days.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first day of media days, and that news leaked.
Was in Birmingham, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because we thought it was weird that A&M brought their AD, and then later that day it made sense why A&M's AD was there.
That was wild. That's right. When I first started, too, that was wild. Look, a lot of it's going to be centered around obviously what we're seeing with this playoff format, right, in 2026 and beyond. You know, Greg Sankey's going to be the focal point of this thing, or some offhanded comment, you know, by Kirby, or, you know, Sark coming out today saying the $40 million number that, you know, that wasn't great reporting. He wishes he had another $15 million, don't we all? I don't think there's going to be anything
another?
Crazy.
No, I don't know about that, Jake. I want my first 15.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'd love to just have a 15.
First 15 is the toughest.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. The first 15 is the toughest. Now, I don't think it's going to be anything crazy. I just, as long as we don't have to talk about Bill Belichick and his fiance, I'm fine to talk about
that. We're not talking about that, Jake. No. Just yeah, as the famous words. We're not talking about that. You know, we are on Tahad watch. That's something that continues with Auburn, and you know,
not
with
much
the,
longer.
Yeah, as you know, what the all along the watchtower, right? The hour's getting late for it's about a day and a half until the deadline to drop out of the NBA draft. Florida got big news with Condo coming back. I think they're your preseason favorite after the Alex Condon news, coupled with the Boogie Flan news last week, and Auburn would be in the mix if they can get Tahad Pettiford back, but that's a huge if with one day to go before the draft deadline.
Yeah, it is, and you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to have some inside information about what he's going to do and what he's not going to do. I just still, it's just hilarious that Bruce Pearl's gotten Auburn to the point now where we're wondering if our freshman point guard's going to leave early to go to the NBA or not. That's what we're talking about now. It's just funny to think back of where we were and where we are now. I hope he comes back. You know, when you look at the late first round projection, early second round projection, I know he's worked out for a couple teams too. I was surprised he measured in at 6 foot without shoes on. That actually kind of surprised me a little bit. But either way, you know, Coach Pearl's going to have a roster that's going to be super competitive. But if he does come back, you know, the hype train's going to be one thing. But when you look at Tahad, I mean, it's not like he's even close to tapped out. Like, I don't even think he's gotten close to being what he could end up being, especially for Auburn if he stayed for another year or two. So I'm hoping he does, but it's a high-class problem to have, I will say that. And what Coach Pearl's done with, you know, this roster repeatedly, the turnover, it's going to be interesting to see. But I'm just, at this point, I just want to know. Just, are you coming back, you're not coming back? So, you know, it can rip the Band-Aid off or start drinking the Kool-Aid again.
Yeah, we will find out soon, very soon. Jake, let everybody know what you got going on with Crane & Company.
Yeah, man, look, really easy to find, whether it's audio, whether it's video, we're pretty much everywhere. Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N & Company, got a bunch of big guests coming on here shortly. You got David Pollock coming on, our buddy Josh Pate, got some coaches in the SEC that are coming on, and just, going to keep talking some college baseball, but at the end of the day, like you guys, I'm looking forward to football season too.
I hear you, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great rest of the week.
Take care, Jake.
All right, man. Great to talk to y'all, and hope everybody has a fantastic week.
Jake Crane joins us every Tuesday at 5:30. We'll get to our final break. Yeah, we've got to get into, even though it's Tuesday, we've got to find out about those Monday musings with Brian when we come back here on The Drive. At Reynolds Outdoors.